Radio.
You're listening to PetLifeRadio.com.
Is your pet stressed out? Does your pet need annual vaccines? Which pet is best for a child? Would you know if your dog was in pain? Pet Life Radio presents The Pet Doctor, where you'll learn everything about keeping your pet healthy and happy. From pet care, pet meds, and grooming, to pet food, pet insurance, and dental care. This is the place to find out everything there is to know about pet wellness. Whether you have a dog, cat, reptile, or rabbit, you'll find answers for your pets straight from the vets. Because your pet health matters. Please welcome your pet doctor host, veterinary media consultant, and veterinarian, Dr. Bernadine Cruz.
Dr. Zeltzman, thank you so much for being with us today. I know there are some procedures that you do that the mortal veterinarian would say, wow, that is just spectacular. So thank you again for being with us today.
Well, thank you so much for inviting me.
So, board-certified veterinary surgeon, how much extra training have you had versus the primary care veterinarian?
Well, those veterinarians who wish to become board-certified surgeons have to go through regular vet school, and then typically a one-year internship, and after that, a three-year surgery residency, either in private practice or a university. Then there's a few requirements, such as a research project that has to be published, a specific number of cases in various subspecialties that have to be performed. And only at that point, once you've checked off all these requirements, can you sit for the board exam. And if you pass, you suddenly become a board-certified surgeon.
And that wasn't suddenly. That sounds like just a tremendous amount of work and schooling. And I am so fortunate in my own area here in Southern California to have several board-certified surgeons. And there are many times when I will refer to them. What are some of the common procedures that are referred to you there in Pennsylvania?
Certainly some of the most common procedures we do involve the knees in dogs, whether it's because they tear their ACL, just like in football players, or because they have a dislocated kneecap.
So a trick knee.
So there's a lot of issues in young dogs or olders that we fix, I would say, almost daily. And then, like you said at the beginning of the show, we do a lot of soft tissue surgery, which involve, for example, the belly. Actually, today I saw a young boxer puppy who actually is a repeat offender. A few months ago, she ate a sock, so that had to be removed as well as about a foot worth of her intestine. And 3 months later, she decided to chew on a comforter and needed surgery for that as well.
So this is a dog, it sounds like, should walk around the house with one of those little cage muzzles on so it can't play the Hoover vacuum cleaner. So many people don't realize that they think it's fun giving that puppy something to chew on, like a sock, because, it likes tearing it apart, or some toys. What are your views of giving pets things to chew on?
I think that the closer a toy is to something that you use in your daily life, like a shoe or a sock, any object that resembles something that you use daily might be chewed up. And as a matter of fact, anything might be chewed up. The things I've removed or at least seen that have been eaten by dogs is sometimes scary. A few months ago, we had a young lab chew an entire light bulb. And almost every vet has seen dogs eat a razor blade or a knife or a fork. So just about anything can end up in a pet's stomach.
You can almost see a knife if it had some meat flavoring on it, but a light bulb was like, wow, that was definitely a puppy that was hard up for something good to chew on.
The least pet owners should do is at least eliminate the obvious. If they chew on something unpredictable, then at least it's nobody's fault. But tempting them with obvious things like underwear, I guess maybe we shouldn't go through every underwear category that we see in stomachs, but hide laundry and hide especially dirty laundry, because for sure that's one of the things they prefer.
Well, I know that we should all, I tell my clients, you should always do what your mom said. Pick up your stuff, put it away when you get done. When a family has especially young children and a puppy, and it always seems to be more the dogs than the cats, but I've seen a couple of cats swallowing things they're not supposed to. It always seems like dogs eat first, think later. But especially when they have young children, I'll tell the parents sometimes, get that child on the ground, crawling around the house, looking for things that may be hidden underneath the couch or under cushions or under the bed, and they forgot about that G.I. Joe or the Barbie doll. But you have that young dog in the house now trying to puppy-proof a house, I think is 20 times worse than trying to baby-proof a house, because a dog will get into most anything.
It's a really good point you had about the cats, because they're notorious for eating things called linear foreign bodies, which are anything that looks like a rope or a string or a thread, especially if it's attached to a needle. Even dental floss, they tend to start chewing on these things and they don't seem to know when to stop. And these foreign objects, once they reach the intestine, can cut into it, and that becomes a life-threatening emergency. So definitely cats can eat foreign objects as well.
What would be some of the signs that a pet owner would see if, for instance, a cat did chew on a bit of dental floss?
Vomiting, lethargy, a lack of appetite. If the intestine has been cut through by the thread, or the floss rather, they can have a fever. They will just be very, very sick.
You'd mentioned needles and thread. I have seen, and it's one of those things where sometimes a cat will come in not feeling well, you'll take an x-ray, and there is a needle. And you hope that there isn't any string on the end of it, because though I don't like doing this, there have been instances where we've literally watched a needle pass through from mouth to bum, coming out the other end and never penetrated anything, and the cat never seems to look back. And it's like, ugh. That's a person that needs to go out and buy a lottery ticket, because...
Absolutely.
Yeah, that's amazing.
Unusual, but it does happen. The one thing I would like to add is that pet owners certainly should never pull on the thread if they see a little piece hanging up from the mouth, or the other end for that matter.
Thank you for bringing that up, because sometimes, yes, all of a sudden it seems very tempting. Okay, if I'm just going to tug, just tug a little bit more, why shouldn't they tug, Dr. Zaltzman?
If there is a needle at the other end, it could perforate an organ, and that can be deadly. And if not, it can certainly cause a lot of damage.
Seems like most of the times now, sewing is that four-letter word for most people. If there's a problem, needs a button, just throw it away and get something else. But if you are going to sew, you have things around the house. At Christmas, everybody knows what packages come from my house, because I have two cats, and I cannot put any type of ribbon or string or anything on the packages, because the cats will always get to it and start chewing on it. And I don't feel like taking a trip to the emergency clinic with my own cats to have something removed. So, yes, do be careful.
That's definitely a classic at Christmas time.
You talked a little earlier about some of the football injuries, like the torn cruciate ligaments in the knees. What breeds are most commonly affected by these? What kind of dogs?
I would say the two most common ones we see are the Lab and the Rottie. Part of it is because of genetics and probably not very good genes. Certainly a big part of this is being chubby, which these two breeds are prone to.
Is it something that they're out there playing and all of a sudden they just come up lame? Or can it be a more gradual process? It seems like I've seen a little bit of both. What do you see mostly?
Definitely a little bit of both. What typically happens in football players or skiers is that they're fine 1 second and crippled the next. Whereas in dogs, at least inside, it's a slowly deteriorating problem, and eventually something will cause a complete tear of the ligament. So it seems like it's the squirrel that the dog was chasing that caused the problem, when in fact it had been brewing for several weeks or 7 months.
And so those big, heavy dogs, ones chasing their tennis balls and doing the frisbee routines in the air, those kids can have the problems. What's frustrating, I think, for a lot of people is that they'll bring the pet in to their primary care veterinarian, and it's lame doc, and I want to have an x-ray taken. Give us the whys and wherefores of why x-rays really are not going to diagnose this most of the time.
Because we don't see the ligaments, and the ACL is a ligament. We don't see this on the x-ray. So we do take x-rays, but usually not as a diagnosis. It may show that there's too much fluid in a joint. It may show that there's arthritis. It doesn't show the ligament. Reasons we would take x-rays would be, for example, to rule out other problems. I remember, for example, a little poodle mix who was sent in for an ACL tear who turned out to have bone cancer.
Oh, my goodness.
So it's to rule out bad diseases and make sure we're not missing something. In some cases, there's a fancy surgery, in short, called a TPLO, to address the tear of the ACL. The reason we do the x-ray is also to measure an angle so we can prepare the surgery adequately.
A friend of mine has seven Australian Shepherds, and they have huge property. They were running around in the backyard having a great time, came up suddenly lame, brought the dog in. I palpated the leg when the dog was very sedate, and I could feel some laxity, so I did send this dog to a board-certified veterinary surgeon to have a TPLO done. What is the usual, and I know this dog is going to have a fairly long recovery time, what's the usual recovery process and what's that going to involve?
Well, different surgeons will say different things. The way I address the TPLO procedure is 2 months of very strict rest with leash walks only, which allows the bone that we cut during the procedure to heal nicely. And after that, we exercise the dog more and more and more to rebuild muscle and help with the range of motion in the knee. Some people will recommend to do physical therapy earlier, but that's one of those controversies that surgeons love so much. Bottom line, it typically works very nicely. It's a long recovery only because we cut a bone and we put a bone plate and some screws in it. So I would say whichever procedure we do, it's about a 2 month recovery and then some rehab.
What's the prognosis afterwards? What's the chance that most dogs, if they follow the doctor's orders, take it easy for their 2 months' time, whatever, will be able to get back out there and be the athlete again?
In my practice, in the way we do things, I would say 98%, which to be better than what's published in the official literature.
You're good.
I'm strict. The rules are
they
strict.
They say, yes, doctor.
Sometimes, most of the time. The rules are strict because that's what seems to be giving good results.
Seems to work. Now, you had mentioned that little poodle that came in. They thought they had a torn ligament and actually had cancer. What can a surgeon do for cancer? Because I think most people would think, oh, this is going to be something for chemotherapy or radiation therapy.
You're right. In some cases, we use that primarily. However, if you talk to a surgeon, and probably most veterinarians, we will typically, this may be oversimplifying, we typically recommend amputation, and depending on the diagnosis, chemotherapy. There are some cases where maybe we would choose chemo only or radiation only. That would be based on the actual diagnosis. I would say that most of the time we end up recommending amputation. These dogs do great on three legs, although some people may doubt it initially. My clients are typically happily surprised when they see how well their dog walks on three legs.
I think it is amazing, you're right, because there have been instances, sometimes cancer, sometimes trauma, where there's just no way to save the limb. And you'll have a pet that now has three legs. Initially, it's a little bit harder for them to figure out, okay, how am I supposed to get up? But once they seem to understand, and I've seen this in small dogs as well as large, they're up, they're moving, they don't even think twice about it. So it's really much more of a stigma for the owner, I think, than the dog or the cat.
Absolutely. That's the beauty of dogs and cats, is that they don't know what's going on. All they notice is that the pain is suddenly gone, and they're able to walk because they're they're functional on three legs. And a lot of clients actually know that without realizing it. Whenever a pet is lame, if they hold a leg up, they're three-legged and they function very well. So that's the wonderful thing about working with pets, is that they adjust to just about anything we do with them.
They are so much braver and stronger, I think, than most people.
They are definitely, without any question in my mind, braver than a lot of people, yes.
You'd also mentioned the same little poodle. So many times I see these small breeds of dogs coming into my practice, and I will always try and check this out on the small breeds when they're puppies, of having knee issues. So their little trick knees, their kneecaps are popping in and out of joint. Could you discuss a little bit about medial patellar or even lateral patellar luxation trick knees and what people can do to look for it, and what they can do to try and keep their pet from having the arthritis that too often goes along with it?
I think that we see two groups of dogs. It's really rare in cats. Some are very young, and they're basically crippled because the kneecap pops in and out of the knee joint, and it makes that knee, and actually it's sometimes both knees, just not functional. So either these pets will hop on three legs and have one non-functional leg. Sometimes the complaint is, I've had many dogs before, this is my first puppy who cannot jump onto furniture. So when we do surgery on these dogs and we stabilize the kneecap, these dogs typically do great. Occasionally, we'll have a dog who survives this period, and then we'll see them when they're 6 or 7 or 8 years of age, when arthritis sets in. What happens is that when the kneecap pops in and out for all these years, eventually the cartilage wears out and they have bone-on-bone contact, which becomes painful. That's typically why we suddenly see them when they're 6 or 7 or 8. It's because of the pain and the arthritis.
I think people are amazed so frequently when all of a sudden that little dog is three-legged and it's walking along, and then the knee just kind of pops back into joint and they keep going, and they go, but it doesn't hurt. Isn't it just being cute? It's like, no, that's not being cute. There is a reason why your dog is walking around on three legs. It's not trying to be, you know, the circus dog.
The reason we recommend to do surgery in these young dogs, even when they don't seem to be severely affected, is because surgeons tend to look forward, and because we know these dogs will eventually get severe arthritis, we try to do the surgery early to prevent the problems 5 years later. And again, it's a surgery that works very well.
Because once that arthritis is set in, there is nothing that even you, the expert surgeon, can really do to reverse it or cure it.
Correct. There's no cure for arthritis. However, we can still stabilize the kneecap in an older dog. It works very well as well. It's just that we can't take the arthritis away. There's other things we can do. We can recommend a special joint diet with glucosamine. We can recommend omega-3 fatty acids. We can recommend physical therapy. We can certainly recommend weight loss, but we cannot fix the arthritis any more than physicians can in people.
Well, you were reading my mind, because I wanted to chat with you about arthritis and diets and degenerative joint changes. But right now we're going to take a short little break. We'll be right back with Dr. Phil Zeltman, and he is a board-certified veterinary surgeon who's going to be talking a little bit more about arthritis and many more. Stay tuned. We'll be right back.
Please have a seat in the waiting room. The doctor will be with you shortly, right after these messages.
Flight 291 is now boarded. All passengers, please proceed to gate 4.
And who's this traveling with us today?
This is Bailey. She's never flown Midwest Airlines before.
Hi, Bailey. She'll be fine. We take special care of our traveling pets. In fact, our Premier Pet Program was created by an employee and dog lover who believes that pets should be handled as precious cargo. And they are. Oh, and they earn travel rewards too.
Oh, good.
Thanks for flying Midwest Airlines, Bailey. Enjoy your flight. Visit MidwestAirlines.com.
Pets are part of the family, and when traveling with your dog, there's only one magazine to include when packing your doggy's duffel bag, and that's Fido Friendly, the travel and lifestyle magazine for you and your dog. Each bi-monthly issue includes hotel, city, and state reviews, and doggy destinations to explore with your furry companion. Fido Friendly magazine can be found at Borders, Barnes & Noble, PetSmart, Pet Boutiques, and Fido Friendly hotels nationwide. Or you can go online to subscribe at www.fidofriendly.com. So get traveling with your pet today and leave no dog behind. And remember, Fido Friendly's the only magazine dedicated to the travel lifestyle of man's best friend and the one magazine your dog will thank you for.
Welcome to Personals.com. As a fellow cat owner, I know how finicky we are, from our friendships to our loves to just about everything. Not any old website is going to satisfy us. Here at Personals.com, cat lovers from all walks of life can celebrate the photos, the stories, and videos of their beloved family member. And if you're single, here's your chance to meet someone who's perfect for you. Share your personality today for free. See you soon.
Personals.com. That's PURRSONALS.com. Finally, a place to meet that special person.
Greetings, human. What planet am I on?
Welcome to Pet Planet. Here's a copy of Pet Planet magazine, Florida's most informative and fun pet resource magazine. It features heartwarming stories and informative articles from local and national pet experts.
Excellent.
Pet Planet magazine offers Operation Planet Rescue, helping rescued pets find new homes. And it's available at 500 locations in South and Central Florida and 24/7 on the internet at PetPlanetMagazine.com. If you're out and about with your pet, you may be featured in Paparazzi, candid pictures of you and your pet. For up-to-date pet-friendly events, activities, and pet-related services and products, Pet Planet Magazine is your final destination.
I shall take this magazine home with me.
Back to your home planet?
No. To my condo in Boca.
Pet Planet Magazine. Check them out at www.petplanetmagazine.com or 352-394-8578. It's out of this world.
Want to know what cats like to eat for breakfast? Mice Krispies, of course. Learn everything there is to know about cats on Catitude with your host, Tom Doc. Each week, we'll spotlight a cool cat breed, give up-to-date advice on cat health, and check out spiffy new cat products. So curl up on the couch every week for a perfectly enjoyable time on Catitude. Every week on demand, only on PetLifeRadio.com.
Let's Talk Pets on PetLifeRadio.com.
Welcome back to The Pet Doctor on Pet Life Radio with Dr. Bernadine Cruz. The doctor is in and will see you now.
Dr. Z, obesity. It is such a rampant problem in the United States for people as well as pets. What are some of the complications that you're seeing as a surgeon caused by obesity, or that obesity just makes matters worse?
Well, we already talked about knee problems. It certainly exacerbates arthritis for those pets who suffer from it. And then it causes a number of problems, again, from my perspective as a surgeon, whether it's during anesthesia, which is riskier when the patient is overweight or obese. It certainly makes the recovery more difficult. You know, I always diplomatically compare the recovery of an obese pet as if we were carrying a bag of rocks on our back after surgery. It would obviously make our recovery more difficult and more painful.
Very definitely. I tell people it's probably not the best analogy, but it's a lot easier for a mouse to get around on three legs and improve versus an elephant. So If your pet's overweight, here's another good reason for it to lose some weight so it doesn't damage those joints, making anesthesia worse if it needs to go under, for instance, even just to get its teeth cleaned. You'd mentioned glucosamine. A lot of people think that, I know, I'll give my pet some glucosamine. It has some arthritis. It's going to make it go away. What does the glucosamine chondroitin sulfate actually do for the joints?
Some people swear by glucosamine because it is believed to help the health of the cartilage. It's by no means a cure. Again, we don't have a cure for arthritis. I have some of my own clients and nurses who use glucosamine in their pets, and they swear by it. And certainly what everybody keeps saying is that we don't think it hurts. So that's why we can give it as a supplement by mouth, and we can also recommend diets that are enriched in glucosamine. The one thing I'd like to mention is that the brands that are actually honest about what they put into their diets will tell you that they cannot put enough and process the food and have enough to make a difference. So that's why it's also important to give supplements in addition to the diet.
Very good point. Now, you're mentioning here we have all these obese pets. People try to get them to lose weight, and sometimes they go, but can't you just do liposuction? People are very much into that quick fix. What are your views about liposuction in pets and cosmetic surgery in general?
I have yet to see a dog have liposuction, although it's an interesting concept. I think that it's certainly not a described or recommended procedure. However, in my mind, there's exactly two ways to lose weight, and I'm only talking about dogs because this is what I and cats actually because this is what I deal with: eating less calories and exercising more. I don't know another way to do this. So it is a long process. It took time to put the weight on. It will take time to take the weight off. The other incentive that I think clients or pet owners should keep in mind is that there was a classic study a few years ago that showed that thin dogs outlive chubby dogs by 2 years, which in human years is not a huge amount of time, but in doggy years, it's a very, very long time. So for medical reasons, because pet owners typically love their pet, overfeeding them because they feel that it's a reward and it's a proof of love is actually hurting them, as we just discussed, and it's really shortening their lifespan. So I, in my newsletter, for example, it's a recurring topic, which I entitle Killing with Love.
You're exactly right, because so many people feel guilty because they're working too many hours, they don't have enough time to devote to their pet, take it for a walk, play with it, do whatever. So I know, we'll just give it another treat, we'll just give it another snack. And then pretty soon, because it happens right in front of their eyes, it's so hard sometimes for an owner to realize that, no, your pet is not fluffy, it's actually fat. And I'm sure you do it in your practice where I instruct my clients to look for body conditioning. So if you can put your hand on the side of your pet's rib cage and with a little, that's the operative word, a little bit of pressure, you can feel those ribs, it's fine. You want to see a bit of a waistline, and some pets have more of a waistline than other. A little bit of a tuck-up going towards their pelvis. Those are all the signs of a pet that has a good figure. Now, if it looks like a little snossage all over the same size, yep, that pet's probably overweight. Would you agree?
Absolutely, 100%.
Okay.
Pretty much the size, the same criteria on cats, actually.
And now a little bit of a bizarre subject. Cosmetic surgery. You know, people in the United States, we want to stay as young looking as possible. So if our plastic surgeons suggest, how about we take some of the wrinkles out? What are some plastic surgery procedures that are done in pets? Because we're really not doing plastic surgery to keep them young looking, but there are some reasons for plastic surgery.
Correct. There are some that we should eliminate right away. Most surgeons, being ethical vets, will typically refuse to do ear cropping or tail docking. Some vets will refuse to do debarking, if you consider that a cosmetic surgery. However, there are some, quote, cosmetic surgeries which are recommend it for medical reasons. So, for example, dogs and cats with a flat face, which are called brachycephalic breeds, for example, a bulldog, have very small nostrils. So there's a procedure we can do to enlarge the nostrils so that they don't struggle as much when they're breathing. And actually, virtually all bulldogs could benefit from it. If we don't do it early in life, they typically have other issues further down the throat. I don't want to get too technical, but most people will know that the roof of the mouth is called the palate, which happens to be hard because there's bone in it. Beyond that is the soft palate, and when a dog, or a person, by the way, snores, it's because the soft palate is too long. And that certainly is a classic in bulldogs. And at that point, we might recommend to trim the soft palate so that they can breathe more easily. So it's not so much the snoring that we care about, it's the medical consequence, which is something that impairs air getting to the lungs.
So it's somewhat like sleep apnea that people get? Dogs get the same thing?
I don't think they get sleep apnea, but they get the same consequences. They can't get enough oxygen on board.
And keeping their owners awake.
Yes.
Some of those poor people have these, you know, snoring spouse and this snoring animal is like, oh, they're doomed. What other plastic surgery procedures have you performed?
Well, since we were talking about bulldogs, they tend to have a lot of extra folds, skin folds. For example, they can have one right over the nose and right in front of their eyes. That can cause a number of problems, such as infections deep inside the fold, or they can have some hair rubbing on their eyes, which is a very painful condition. So we can trim that skin fold and make them all better. There's also a skin fold that can be near the tail. There's a number of names for that. Some people call that a corkscrew tail. Some people call that an inverted tail. Bottom line, that little nub they have needs to be removed to clear this infection, which is sometimes very, very nasty.
It's amazing. You get in there and start cleaning it out, and it just reeks as well as being so red and inflamed. Oftentimes people don't realize that, yes, they do need to get in there and clean it, and there's something that can be done. So thank you for bringing that up.
Yeah, it's remarkable. Once pet owners are aware of it, and again, bulldog owners might look at their own puppy and see if they think something may be happening along those lines, it makes a huge difference. Again, it's not so much about cosmetics, it's about quality of life.
I've had several clients come in and I'm looking at their little bulldogs or pugs and they have these very, very stenotic, narrowed little nasal passages because of this excessive folds. And I'll explain, your pet is having a hard time. It needs to have this surgically taken care of. Oh no, it's having a fun time. It's running around. Everything is fine. After I keep harping on them, it seems like for a year or two, finally they say, okay, just to shut Dr. Cruz up, we'll let her do the procedure. And more times than not, they'll come back saying, I don't know why I didn't do this sooner. This dog is feeling so much better, has so much more energy. I said, yes, it can now actually breathe.
Absolutely. Yeah, no oxygen, no life.
Definitely.
I hear the same thing from my clients. They tell me, you know, it may be a 8-year-old or 10-year-old dog, and they'll tell me he or she acts like a puppy again.
Well, we all want to be, you know, acting like puppies as long as possible. And you were mentioning that you have a newsletter that comes out where you talk about this. Could you give the listeners a little bit of information about your newsletter? And I think you also have a website.
Yes, actually one stems from the other. The website is simply my name. So it's Dr. as in doctor, Phil, my first name, Phil, Zeltzman, my last name, which is Zeltzman, so drphilzeltzman.com. And there's a lot of information, mostly about surgery and pets, but not only. There's also some medical conditions that are described. And from the website, people can subscribe to a newsletter, which is completely free, which I write once a week, and it's email-based. So people get it in their inbox once a week. And we talk about a variety of subjects, so a lot of the things we discussed today. And, for example, right now I'm working on a newsletter about puppy mills. I'm working on one about pet insurance and another one about cancer. I mean, the topics are endless.
and your energy seems to be endless for being a surgeon all day and then an author all night. I'm impressed.
Well, thanks. Well, it seems that the feedback I get is really what gets me going. I had a lady once upon a time tell me that she was talking to a colleague at work about the newsletter because she realized her colleague didn't have her female dog spayed. So the same evening, that lady felt her dog's belly and noticed a mass. Huh. So the next day, the female dog went to the vet, and sure enough, she had a tumor in her breast. So this is a dog that I helped remotely. I've never met this lady. I've never seen this dog, but it seems that it's making a difference. So I continue.
That is great. And too many times people will get some very erroneous information from going to the website. I tell people, you get what you pay for. So here is something free, but they're getting something marvelous, some very credible, good information. If somebody had questions, can they email you and get an answer back?
Well, my clients know they can. They can try. It's difficult. I can't answer questions from pets I haven't seen. I think it's better that people educate themselves and then talk to their regular veterinarian. I think it's a better way to do this. The other issue may or may not be that I'm not licensed in all 50 states, and there may be some legal ramifications.
Well, I think you're exactly right. Talk to your primary care veterinarian first. Hopefully you have a good relationship going with them, because they should know your pet better than anyone else, especially how can you diagnose over the email. So, yes.
Absolutely. One of the reasons I even created it is because, just like you said, pet owners sometimes are desperate for information and they can end up in really, really bad sites or chat rooms and get very bad information. And one day I got tired of it because I realized that, you know, yet another pet got euthanized because people got the wrong information. So every link, every piece of information was chosen because I trust it. So I guess my opinion is very subjective, but hopefully this is reliable information.
Well, I appreciate all the information that you've been giving us today, because the goal of my entire show is to educate the pet owner, to do a little bit of entertaining if possible, and trying to make it possible for you to be the best pet owner that you can be. Though Dr. Zeltzman, understandably, will not take or is unable to answer all email questions, neither can I. But if you do have a question, number one, ask your primary care veterinarian, but you can also email me at thepetdoctor@petliferadio.com, and I'll try to get some answers back for you. So thank you very much for listening today. You've been listening to Dr. Bernadine Cruz on The Pet Doctor on PetLifeRadio.com. Please tune in next week when we'll have some more interesting information for the pet owner. Take care.
Pets can be a wonderful addition to your life. Because they're a member of the family, keeping them healthy and happy is important. Pet Life Radio presents The Pet Doctor with veterinary media consultant and veterinarian Dr. Bernadine Cruz. Whether you have a dog, cat, reptile, or rabbit, you'll find answers for your pets straight from the vets. On demand every week, only on PetLifeRadio.com.